The question we all need to face as Christians in the times that we live in is this. This is the question. Are you and I even in the battle? Are most Christians in the battle? Or is a remnant just the ones in the battle? Is the majority of Christians sitting on the sidelines watching the battle go? Again, you might say, well, what battle are we in? Well, if you study prophecy, if you understand the signs of the times, if you understand how prophecy is converging and heading us towards the tribulation, then you know that there's a battle raging, a spiritual battle, and it's been going on for some time, but it has ramped up. And you and I who watch prophecy, we understand things, we see this battle. But for most Christians, some of them don't even know that they're even in a battle. They may even know that there's a battle going, but they don't want to get involved in it. Many are oblivious to things, especially those who do not have a formed eschatology to understand what the Bible predicts. And because they lack an eschatology, a view of the end times, a view of understanding prophecy, whether it's a pastor or church or the average church goer, if they don't have any idea of prophecy, they won't know what to look for. So they're oblivious to it. They're ignorant to it. Some, in fact, are just willfully ignorant. They know about what prophecy teaches, but they refuse to admit that the world is crumbling around them. And they stick their head in the sand, bury it there deep, and hopefully things will just simply go away. But as you and I know, as we watch things happening and developing, things are not going away. What you and I have been watching are the birth pains. Things are increasingly getting worse and worse. The birth pains, as the Lord described, would come more frequently and with more intensity. Look at how many things have developed and are set in motion now. The table is set for many, many things to occur. The invasion of Gog of Magog. All these things, we're on the cusp of the one world government, the one world religion developing. We're seeing this play out right in front of our eyes. And so many of us who are in this fight look around and we want to see who's in the trenches with us. And what we're noticing is that there are a lot of believers that are not in the trenches with us. They've put themselves in a bubble. They're in isolation. And they're pretending that none of this is happening. In fact, when you try to tell them that this is happening, they just don't want to hear it. They say, don't tell me about that stuff. It upsets my life. It upsets me. And unfortunately, they go through life with blinders on, not being able to discern the signs of the times. And that's really sad. So the question we have to ask ourselves, are we in the fight? You and I probably are in the fight, as you know, but many, many people are not. And like it or not, the battle is raging. Satan doesn't take a day off. Satan doesn't take a vacation. He doesn't need a nap. He doesn't sleep. Him and his demonic hordes are raging against God and the Bible and everything the Bible predicts. And so this war is going to come, whether you like it or not, if it hasn't already, to your front door. And every Christian must make a decision. Every Christian must understand what's at stake. And understand in this battle, there are many fronts. You have to understand where the fronts are. One of the big fronts that we talk about constantly is the issue of Israel and their right to the land, their right to exist as a people. God has promised them through Abraham's promise, the Abrahamic covenant, that they're entitled to the land. And unfortunately, that's where one of the battles is raging. We're seeing now in the church, especially in North America, the battle is raging towards the social gospel instead of the real gospel. So a lot of churches are pushing the social gospel instead of the real one. We're looking at on national levels the formation of the one world government, which is another battleground. What we're facing here today in America is the loss of national sovereignty. So many leftists, so many Marxists, so many communists, have this mentality that we need to have open borders and a free society, and then anybody can come and go as they want. What it really is an attack on national sovereignty and a push for globalism, a one-world government. And then we see the formation right in front of our eyes of the one-world religion, of tolerance, unity. Let's come together. Let's push aside our theological differences. They'll say, we all worship the same God. Let's all get together and sing Kumbaya. That right there is another battlefront. We're looking at the exclusivity of the gospel, that salvation is only through Jesus Christ. That's a battlefront. The attack on prophecy, that if you start talking about prophecy and the end times, people go crazy on you, particularly Christians. They don't like it. They don't want to hear it. There's another battlefront. It's called the scoffing that Peter talked about and warned about in 2 Peter. And then we have apostasy, another battlefront that's raging. You see, recently this guy, Joshua Harris, who wrote the book a long time ago, I Gave Up Dating. And now this guy, after 20 years of marriage and being in the ministry, is going to leave the ministry, leave Christianity, leave his wife after 20 years, says he doesn't believe in Christ, the Bible, whatever. And now he was spotted at gay pride parades, wearing, you know, rainbow colored t-shirts and promoting the LGBT lifestyle. It probably tells you where he's going. But anyway, we're seeing this apostasy right in front of our very face, and this is another battlefront. At the end of the day, what it comes down to, the big battle, is the Bible's authority. Does God say this or that? That's what Satan did to Adam and Eve. Did God really say this? Or did he mean this? And so what's under attack is what God has said. God says this is right or this is wrong. That's now under attack, and that's the fight we're in. Well, one of the battlefronts we want to talk about today specifically, and it's a big battlefront, and you have to know what's happening, is sexual immorality. Sexual immorality was warned about. It's warned against constantly. The Greek language uses the word porneia. That's where we get the word pornography from. But porneia, the Greek word, includes all forms of sexual immorality. So some people say, well, homosexuality is not talked about in the New Testament. Yes, it is. The very word porneia includes incest, adultery, fornication, homosexuality, lesbianism, pedophilia, bestiality. So these arguments from these so-called gay Christians who say, well, that's Old Testament stuff. The Old Testament was against all that. No, the Greek word porneia includes homosexuality, lesbianism, transgenderism, pedophilia, all that we're seeing today. And so there is another battlefront. The proliferation of sexual immorality and that being used to club you and I over the head with. Jude 1:7 says this, as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities around them in a similar manner to these, having given themselves over to sexual immorality and gone after strange flesh, are set forth as an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. What did it mean when Jude said, when he married strange flesh to sexual immorality? Well, it's the idea of going after things that are prohibited by Scripture sexually. Whether that's incest, whether that's fornication, adultery, whether that's homosexuality, lesbian, that's going after strange flesh. It's flesh that's off limits, or even bestiality. So that's talked about all through the New Testament, and you can't get around it. But again, this is what they're clubbing us over the head, saying, you guys are antiquated, that's old stuff, we're progressive, we're new, and you need to get on board and accept every deviant sexual practice that this world is now doing. And as you know, our world has drastically changed. It started really in the United States with the sexual revolution in the 1960s. So now it's built up to today, and the new motto, as you've probably seen it on shirts and all over gay pride parades or wherever, they'll see this logo, love is love. And what that means is no boundaries, no restrictions, no limitations. But the Bible defines what love is, and it gives parameters and boundaries and qualifications for what love is, and primarily who you can love properly in many different relationships. The first thing you have to understand about the Bible, it talks about love in the sense of agape, which is a self-sacrificial love. Then you have phileo, which is a brotherly love. Then you have storge, which is a familial love between, like, you know, brothers and sisters, and then you know, family members, parents to children. And then you have eros, which is a romantic love between a husband and a wife. Even though this word eros doesn't appear in the New Testament, it's eros that is to be used in the confines of sex between a man and a woman in the boundaries of marriage, period. And that's where it stays. We don't use eros anywhere else. So this is what's happening. Our world is taking the concept of love, or really eros, that's where we get the word erotic, and putting it on strange flesh. They're loving the wrong things erotically. Eros is only to be used in the confines of marriage between a man and a woman. So what happens when someone goes after strange flesh? Well, according to Romans 1, when the truth is not accepted about this, or any truth for that matter, and people don't like the truth, as you know, this is what happens. In Romans 1:18, it says this: "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and all unrighteousness of men." And what? "Who suppress the truth in unrighteousness." So, in other words, when a person decides to suppress the truth, particularly like we're talking about sexual immorality, and they suppress it and saying what God's saying is wrong, and they say love is love, you can love anything you want, and foist eros on any object, thing, person, whatever, then something happens to the individual. As Paul notes, the wrath of God is revealed, and it will be revealed in several areas of the person. So what happens? The person becomes futile in their thoughts when you suppress the truth. Their hearts become darkened. They become fools. They are given over to their sexual immorality desires. He actually just gives them over to it. They start having a debased mind. They start committing what is shameful sexually. So they just don't stay at one place. It degenerates and they get worse and worse and worse. And the person becomes unloving. These people in the LGBT movement think they're being loving, but the scripture is saying they're becoming unloving. The Greek word translated as no love is astorgos, no love. What the way you translate that is without natural affection. And Paul warned that this would happen to people in the last days. He said this in 2 Timothy 3:3, that one of the marks of the terrible times of the last days is that people would lack natural love. Their love is really no love. They lack it even though they think they have it. They have what's called estorge, no love. It's unnatural. And then, according to the Apostle Paul, these individuals become unmerciful, according to Romans 1:31. So this brings us to the examples we want to look at to show us the battlefront. So you're going to deal with people who are involved in sexual immorality, which causes them their hearts to be darkened, basically to become fools in their mind, but become the most unloving and unmerciful of people you will ever see. And I want you to start seeing this in the examples in this battlefront. So when a person suppresses true love, the biblical definition of love, and then they promote love, their own version of love through sexual immorality as if it is love when it's not, they become unmerciful. especially those who don't accept their lifestyle, especially those who don't accept their immorality. So if you come against someone who's living together, if you come against someone who's committing adultery, if you come against someone caught in the homosexual lesbian lifestyle, and you say, hey man, you need to get out of that lifestyle, you need to get out of your situation, what you're doing is going to hurt you, and you're trying to be the most loving and kind of warn them, hey, you need to get help, they're going to turn on you. And this is where soft persecution is coming. This is where legal persecution is going to go. And eventually you're going to see hard persecution, where they will physically hit you, attack you, do whatever they need to do. So let's look at some examples of this sexual immorality and this unmercifulness coming through in our culture. A couple months ago, the U.S. women's soccer team won the soccer championships. The main person on that team, Megan Rapinoe, who believes and states that the U.S.'s victory was only made possible because their players are lesbian. Yes, she actually did say this. She says, you can't win a championship without gays on your team. It's never been done before, ever. And she says, the most ridiculous thing in the world, that's science right there. Anyway, she goes on to just continue to be a foul-mouthed individual, would not salute the flag, would not stand for the national anthem, would always take a knee. So what you see in her is this woman who's now turned a lesbian and now is saying, you know, it's science and you can't have gays, you can't win a championship without being gay. She's making the most ridiculous statements, but she is vitriolic. She is on a rampage. You can see the anger in this individual inside of her in what she says. They couldn't stop her saying all the most foulest things in the world when they were interviewing her, because her mouth just continues to vomit obscenities. And it shows you she's unmerciful and she's trying to push her views. But this is what we're having to deal with. Who makes the statement, you can't win a championship without gays on your team? That's just insane. She goes, that's science right there? But again, you're seeing this attitude, this unmercifulness, shoving it down your throat. You will accept it, is her attitude. Look at another example. This happened at Mile High Comics in Denver. And it sponsored all ages drag show. Can you believe that's happening? And they targeted children. And basically, this is kind of a conditioning thing for the acceptance of pedophiles. But anyway, that happened. And you think, I cannot believe this is going on in my country. But this is where the battlefront is. This is what they're doing. And then in another example, as you know, across all the nation, libraries are continuing to have this so-called drag queen story hour. I can't even believe this is happening. You know, we sometimes think, well, that would happen in San Francisco, but it's happening all through the country at libraries, public libraries. This is pushed by the American Library Association, which is completely ungodly leftist organization that's pushing this LGBT agenda. And by the way, the parents are taking their kids to them. So you have to scratch your head and think, what's wrong with these parents? Are you insane? This is insane and it needs to stop. But it's going to go further than this. So according to PJ Media, they wrote a story. And the story was talking about drag queen story hour. But it was raising some serious questions about child protection protocol, which these drag queen story hours are devolving. And how are they devolving? Well, there's recently photographs that have surfaced, according to PJ Media, showing a drag queen, Carla Rossi, rolling around on the floor in full body contact with minor children at the Multnomah County Library there in Oregon. And now these drag queen story hours are encouraging children to lay on the floor with men dressed up as women after story time is over. And they have multiple photographs of this occurring at these libraries. And they're circulating all through Twitter, showing a grown man who was either contracted or volunteered to read stories to children lying on the floor with children sprawled out all on top of him in full body contact. The photographs were recently removed from the library's Flickr account, but people got the pictures. The event appears to have happened last October, and the photographs were recently found on the library's Flickr account. So this is happening. So it's devolving, and this is devolving into pedophilia. Rosie isn't the only queen acting inappropriately at these events, by the way. In Houston, it was discovered that two drag queens had criminal histories of child molestation. Oh, that doesn't surprise us, does it? And weren't even supposed to be near schools or places where children go. But it had escaped the library's director's notice, and they didn't pay attention to that. They didn't decide to do a background check on these people. And because he failed to do any background checks, the molesters were hired to read to children. So let that sink in. Think about that, that this battlefront now is including children into the LGBT community, which is called grooming for pedophilers. The Houston Library allowed two sex offenders to read to children. Think about this. This is more evidence that the libraries are functioning as their own little kingdoms, according to PJ Media, where they simply ignore common sense safety measures that would protect children from child molesters. It's crazy. But these libraries and librarians have lost their minds. 10 years ago, if a guy did this, they would be arrested. They would be put on Megan's Law. They would be a sex offender. But now, libraries are supporting these pedophilers going in there reading stories and having kids lay all over them. And according to Jeffrey Grider of Now the End Begins, it's more than just reading a book. These drag queens are now even twerking in front of the kids, which, if you know what twerking is a simulation of sex in dance form. They're doing that in front of the kids. It's more than just reading. They're doing simulated sex acts by twerking. So understand, this is opening the door to pedophilia. This is the new battlefront. This is the new low that you have to know that's going on. And Jeffrey Grider remarks from Now the End Begins that they're pushing for the definition that love has no age. Now, what do you mean by that? Well, this is the push to normalize pedophilia and place it under the banner of the LGBTQ plus umbrella. If nothing stops this, guys, this LGBTQ plus will soon be adding officially a P for pedophiler under the protective banner. Well, biblically and legally for now, love does have an age according to the 50 states in the United States, which is you have to be above 16. Anything below that age is considered statutory rape, depending on the state's conditions. Generally, if adults above a certain age are involved, it will be prosecuted as such. But if you come against this, then they are going to come after you. They're going to say you're the problem because you're not allowing love. You're a hater. And they're going to try to shame you. And folks, here's the deal. You and I must be willing to accept worldly shame. Let them try to shame us. Say that we're a hater. Accept that. Accept that the world rejects us. Accept that the world hates us. We're trying to tell people what true love is by God's standards, and they're trying to change it. And that's going to bring heat on us. So as a believer, we have to stand for the truth. We have to bear the shame of the Messiah and be rejected by this world. And that's okay. But you have to understand, in this battle, you will be rejected by the world. What does that mean? Well, it means your family and friends that are not on board with the biblical truth on this issue will turn on you. They'll turn on you like a sheep-killing dog. They'll say, you're the hater, you're the problem. So this is why Jesus said, I have not come to bring peace, but I have come to bring a sword. the truth divides, basically. He says a father will be against his son, a mother against her daughter. And then he continues on, and in that passage he says, a man's own family members will be his enemies. And so you must be able to take the rejection even from your own family, even from your friends at church who think you're crazy. Because some of the pushback that we're getting is not coming from the world per se, it's coming from worldly Christians in the church. Now, I want you to look at a passage and understand the admonition we have for standing for the truth and standing against the world and being rejected by the world. It's in Matthew 16, 24 through 27. And it says, then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone desires to come after me, so this is a discipleship term, not a salvation issue, okay, this passage. It's a discipleship. Come after me means follow me in discipleship. Let him deny himself, which means to be self-sacrificing, sacrifice your life, and take up his cross. Take up the cross means to identify with Messiah's rejection, to identify with Messiah's shame that the world put on him. And he says, and follow me. Choose to follow him down the path of humiliation, rejection, and suffering from this world. So this is the discipleship passage. And he says this, whoever desires to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what profit is it a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man will come in glory of his Father, in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he will be rewarded each according to his works. Notice the last phrase gives you the context. It is not talking about salvation. It is talking about rewarding believers according to their works. And so this idea of losing your life, gaining your life, has to do with discipleship. So let me explain something about this passage. The term psyche is used in the Greek for life, okay? And what does it mean to lose one's psyche? Well, it does not mean going to hell, because this is not a salvation passage. And saving one's psyche or saving one's life does not refer to going to heaven. Again, it's not about salvation. It also doesn't mean deliverance from physical death either, because as you know, the world will persecute you. It persecutes Christians now, and some of them die. So it doesn't mean physical death. What it means deliverance from a wasted life to a life that will be rewarded in the millennial reign of Christ. And that life that you will experience as a reward in the millennial reign will be heightened in its satisfaction. Be heightened in its enjoyment, usefulness to the Messiah in the millennial kingdom, victory, status, authority, and rest, all promised to be rewarded to those who lose their life here. And the idea here is to that you and I are going to take a lot of heat and persecution from unbelievers and even believers who don't know the biblical truth for standing up for Christ and his word. To the world, it looks like we're wasting our lives by doing this, by being engaged in this battle and constantly telling people the truth. It looks like we're wasting our lives. And sometimes we do lose our lives in death. Some people will do that at the hands of persecutors. But in reality, when we stand for the truth and accept the rejection of the world, accept the rejection from our own family members, friends, whatever, we're really gaining rewards in the Messianic kingdom. That's what this is about. Therefore, trying to preserve our lives here, or preserving our reputations here with the world and our Christianity never costing us, we'll lose rewards in the next life. The rewards will be so great for believers who bear the shame of the Messiah that it is worth losing anything that this world can give us, and is worth the shame the world will dish out to us in the form of whether it's soft, legal, or hard persecution. So understand this. We have to make a choice. Some Christians have already made their choice. They've decided to lose their life to stand for the truth. Some have decided to save their life in discipleship. And that's seen typically through the sin of silence or acquiescing to where the world and the culture is going. And they are trying to preserve their life, but in the next life they're going to lose rewards. But understand this. This is one of the many battlefronts, and they're using this battlefront of sexual immorality to come against the church, to come against the Word of God. So a choice has to be made by every believer. Will you stand in the gap and stand for the truth, or will you cave into this? And the caving into it will be seen by the sin of silence.